nothing interesting there in one sense. But thanks for bringing me on. I actually did have some questions for Mr. Monforton. The first of which is that, Mr. Monforton, why are you running under the banner of the GOP instead of as an independent?
Well, a couple of reasons. The simplest is that independents don't often win elections. You pretty much have to be the standard bearer of one of the two major parties in order to win an election. Number two, the Republican Party has a platform. It's not followed by everyone or even most Republicans, but it has a platform that by and large I agree with. Now the challenge for those of us who believe in the platform is to get ourselves elected and get other folks elected who also believe in that platform, and I think when that happens we can make some positive changes in this country.
Mr. Monforton, what type of cases did you rule on while you were a judge?
Well, I sat as a judge in the Bozeman Municipal Court, and that court had jurisdiction almost exclusively with regards to misdemeanors committed within the city of Bozeman. I would say that if I had to put a number on it, probably two-thirds, maybe three-fourths of the cases that I handled were DUIs, traffic-related incidents, or misdemeanor domestic violence cases.
Now, Dr. Roger Roots is currently running for a U.S. Senate seat. Recently, he took part in a debate hosted by the Montana Newspaper Association. Dr. Roots also published an academic paper back in 2001 in the Seton Hall Constitutional Law Journal. Judge, have you read Arcop's Constitutional, and if so, what did you think of its thesis?
I've met Roger. I've talked to him a few times. I like him personally. Unfortunately, I haven't read his article. So if you can summarize the thesis for me, I can give you my two cents on it.
Sure. What I got away from it was that professional law enforcement as it is today is completely unconstitutional. And then kind of Dr. Roots kind of goes at it from there.
Unconstitutional in what sense?
In the sense that they are essentially a standing army that the founders warned us about, much like the Redcoats.
Unfortunately, it's hard to disagree with that. We've seen and we are seeing what amounts to a militarization of a lot of police forces throughout the country. And whether or not it's constitutional, it's certainly problematic. Because when you
well, give... before you go further, Sleepy, I'd like to ask Matthew to please expound upon that. The Supreme Court of the federal government has ruled that officers do not have to protect. And here in Montana, Montana Code Annotated states that an officer does not have to render assistance. Then if they don't have to do that, that means their only duty is to enforce code. And there's a conflict of interest there because their pension is based upon, through the CAFR and CRIS reports, their pension is based upon the amount of money they bring into the system. That's kind of generalized. With all of the abuse that law enforcement has given, and the internet has tens of thousands of videos on that, with over 5,000 deaths since 9/11 of private citizens, and as you stated in the beginning, judicial review boards are sweeping under the street, under the carpet, judicial misconduct. We have found that the Internal Investigations Department for the police force are doing the same. So I think the question that Sleepy was asking for clarification on is, do you believe the police force in its current form is a law enforcement agent, or are they truly peace officers here to protect the people? I know it's a tough question, but there are a lot of people right now who are just absolutely disgusted with law enforcement, and they want nothing to do with them.
But I think the problem that you put your finger on is how are the pensions funded of these folks? And my understanding is that they get their pensions regardless of how many arrests are made, how many convictions are obtained. If there is some kind of evidence that indicates that their salary or their benefits or their pension or any other form of compensation is based on a quota system, how many arrests they make, how many convictions are they're able to help obtain, that would be deeply problematic. I haven't seen anything that indicates that. I know you just said that it's in the code somewhere. I'm somewhat familiar with
In the Montana CAFR report, which we were studying in 2010, we found out that the entirety of the judge's retirement fund and 76% of law enforcement funds, retirement funds, were funded through the profit made in the prison system. Now, considering our teachers' fund and our state employees' pension fund is $3 billion in debt, that would indicate that they are receiving benefit from incarcerating people. But anyway, we can touch on that at some other point, and we can sit down and discuss that over a cup of coffee. Sleepy, I'm sure you have some more questions, and I'm sure there's more in the chat room. But please go ahead, Sleepy, so we can – you've got some good questions there if you have any more.
Yes, yes, I do. Judge Monfortin.
Go ahead.
Oh, by the way, you don't have to call me Judge anymore. You can call me Matt.
Okay, Matt. Matt,
I appreciate the formality, but you don't need to worry about it.
Okay, sure. Matthew, do you believe that vices are crimes? If so, will you attempt as a legislator to outlaw more vices?
The answer to that is yes, I do believe that some vices are crimes, whether we're talking about prostitution or hard drugs such as cocaine, methamphetamines. I was a prosecutor for a number of years, and I understand and appreciate the argument that many libertarians make about how these activities are victimless and that it's none of the government's business. I respect those arguments, but I also respectfully disagree with them because there are certain substances that are so destructive that I think the government has an obligation to criminalize them, cocaine being one of them, methamphetamine, prostitution. I realize that doesn't quite jive with what a lot of libertarians think. Those are issues that I would disagree with as far as what those folks believe in. I generally am pretty libertarian when it comes to government spending, government taxation, and for the most part what government should and should not be doing. But I think there's certain vices that need to be controlled. Now, does there need to be reforms? Absolutely. Our criminal justice system needs significant reforms. The way we deal with people who are drug addicts, that needs to be reformed because there's a substantial amount of people in prison who are in prison because they've got a drug addiction. And keeping them in prison year after year might not be the best solution. We might need to be looking at other solutions, such as drug courts. Drug courts have a pretty good track record of being able to rehabilitate folks and get them off dangerous drugs. But the way those drug courts function, really the only way they can function, is if there's a criminal hammer that can drop down on people if they don't do what they need to do to get their life straightened out. So I don't know if that answers your question, or if it does, probably isn't the answer you're looking for, but that's where I stand on that.
No, you did answer the question. Thank you. Matthew, do you believe that Montanans enjoy the natural right to travel? If so, would you introduce legislation to repeal the entire Montana Vehicle Code?
Right to travel, you mean based on the U.S. Constitution?
More or less, yes.
Because there is no right to travel within in the United States Constitution itself. It's something that we all kind of recognize and we all sort of take for granted. It's not a right that's in the United States Constitution. And as far as repealing the traffic code, I think most of the traffic laws are there because they're needed, because there needs to be some kind of a system of traffic control. I've been to third world countries where they don't have that, and as annoying as many of our traffic laws are, I'd rather be able to get my kids to school safely than not.
Just to be clear, you would not be interested in introducing legislation, should you be elected, to repeal the requirements in Montana for Montanans to get a driver's license, register their vehicles, get the automobile insurance, and so forth. You would not be in favor of repealing those requirements.
Correct.
Last year, the New Hampshire legislature introduced HB 638, which, if it had passed, would have been their formal recognition of the ratification of the Titles of Nobility Amendment. If elected, would you introduce a bill recognizing the ratification of the Titles of Nobility Amendment?
You're going to have to explain that one to me. Ratification of Titles of Nobility.
Let me take a quick shot at that.
Walk me through what you mean, because unfortunately I'm not familiar with bills that have been enacted in New Hampshire.
Let me give a shot at that, Sleepy, real quick. What occurred in 1810 was a bill called the Titles of Nobility Act, I believe it was 1810, that established that reinforced what was already in the Constitution and stripped citizens who retained a title of nobility of their citizenship. It remained on the books until just before the Civil War, if I remember correctly, as the 13th Amendment. Once the Civil War started and was over, it was stripped from the records, but it is still in the records of military doctrine. It is in the Texas Constitution. It is in the Arizona and Nevada Constitution. What New Hampshire was trying to do was force the federal government to recognize that the 13th Amendment, as we know it, already existed under the Titles of Nobility Act.
So in other words, let me stop you for a second. The 13th Amendment, which outlawed slavery, what you're saying is that amendment existed in some form or fashion prior to the Civil War?
But prior to the Civil War, an amendment titled 13, called the Titles of Nobility, had been ratified by the required number of states and was on the books. I've got all the listings, and I will share that with you. I think, Sleepy, this may be the wrong time since he's not versed in it. I will send it to him and let him look through it. But basically what it did, and a lot of my listeners understand this, was that it was ratified, it was recognized, and was even incorporated in several additional states 40 years after it was ratified. And then during the Civil War, after the Civil War, it simply vanished and has now been replaced by what is the current 13th Amendment. So I don't think it's a fair question to let him try to answer on until he reads up on it, Sleepy, if that's okay with you. Shut you down.
Yeah,
I think it's fair for him to be able to
process. I appreciate you letting me take a pass on that, because to be quite honest, I've never heard anything about that, but I'd be happy to read up on
and
it.
I will. If you've got one more question, Sleepy, I would like you to go ahead and ask that, because we've got questions in the chat room. I'm still not able to get through to them, and Elena's going to ask. Do you have another important question you want to ask?
Yeah, I'll make this my last one then. Matthew, what is your attitude towards the privatization of currently provided government services?
I think basically the more the better. We need to have a limited government, and government at all levels, federal, state, and local, are doing far more things than they should, far more things than what the founders intended government to do. So that's my that's my very short and dirty answer to your question. Anything specific that you have in mind as far as privatization?
Sure. How about the privatization of the court system?
Well, I think having a judiciary that is a judiciary is an inherent part of government. We have to have a court system that is ultimately accountable to the government and have a government that's ultimately accountable to the people. Now, it doesn't mean there can't be other substitutes. There's, for instance, private arbitration is used quite often by private parties that have a dispute and would rather not go through the hassle and expense of litigation, which I can tell you can often be quite high. That I don't have a problem with, but as far as privatizing the entire court system, I don't think that's a workable solution.
Would you be supportive of any effort by the people of Montana to exercise their Article 2, Section 2 right to abolish the Montana government?
Article 2, Section 2 of the United States Constitution or the Montana Constitution?
Of the Montana Constitution.
It would depend on what the grounds are. If the Montana government is completely out of control and acting in a completely lawless fashion, then absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay.
I don't think we're there yet. We've got a lot of problems in this state. We've got a lot of problems, particularly with the government. But I still believe that there are the mechanisms in place by which the right people, if elected, can take back this government and have it serve the people. I may come back on the show in 6 months and say it's too late. We need more drastic measures. But at least at this point, I believe that we can still take back the government with the mechanisms that are in place to do that.